Welcome to Minnesota Matters. I'm Tasha Radel, and I'm joined by MNN's Bill Werner, Brent Palm, and Blois Olson. We're going to delve into what's happening in the North Star State. If it matters in Minnesota, we've got it covered. This week is Gambling Awareness Month. Our series continues on workforce shortages affecting long-term healthcare centers. More Minnesotans are utilizing the 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. But first, there's always some sort of fireworks at the state capitol when the legislature is in session. And this week, it was school lunches.
The Socialist Party of Minnesota is telling the people of Minnesota how they have to feed their kids.
And a bonding bill for state public works projects.
Folks, come on. Work together. We can do it all. We've been asking for it all session long. We want some simple tax relief.
Quit playing political games with my livelihood. Do your job, get back to work, and just get this bonding bill passed today.
What Mandy Reese from Carpenters Local 1382 in Rochester wanted did not happen this week at the Minnesota Capitol.
With there being 33 ayes and 32 noes, the bill does not pass.
The Minnesota House earlier passed that $1.5 billion borrowing package for state public works projects. But Republicans had warned for weeks that when it got to the Minnesota Senate...
I think it's a waste of time because it will be dead on arrival without any tax cuts.
Stillwater Republican Karen Housley, Burnsville Democrat Lindsey Port said about 80% of that bill is from last year's bonding package, which the legislature never passed because of deadlock.
That's projects in our communities across the state of Minnesota that have been waiting for us to do our job. This is our opportunity to finish last year's work.
But Rochester Republican Carla Nelson says her constituents, regardless of party,
they have consistently reached out to me. My email has never been so full, saying, please, please get tax relief to us.
Folks, come on. Work together. We can do it all. We've been asking for it all session long. We want some simple tax relief.
Faribault Senator John Jasinski, Republicans' first priority for relief is totally eliminating state income tax on Social Security benefits. And just before debate began on the bonding bill this week, perhaps to try to change some Republican minds, Democrats did agree to pull that measure, the Social Security tax elimination, out of committee and put it in queue for a floor vote. However,
Senator Duckworth.
Mr. President, will Senator Putnam yield for one more question?
Will you yield? He will yield. Senator Duckworth.
Thank you. So, Senator Putnam, I want to make sure I understand correctly what we're trying to accomplish. So the idea would be we'll move this bill from committee to general orders so that it can be taken up at any time. However, we're not going to take it up for a vote today. Am I understanding that correctly?
Senator Putnam, to the question.
Thank you, Mr. President, and thank you, Senator Duckworth, for that question. In order to do so, we would have to suspend the rules, is my understanding, and that is not my intention to suspend the rules today.
And so the Republican minority did what they said they would do. They withheld the votes the Democrats needed to reach a supermajority on the bonding bill.
All senators voting to have a desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. With there being 33 ayes and 32 noes, the bill does not pass.
Democrats do have a way out, sort of. They could use part of the $18 billion budget surplus to pay cash for projects rather than borrowing. That requires only a simple majority vote, so they would not need Republicans' help. But it would also take money from other programs that Democrats want. Senate Capital Investment Committee Chair St. Paul Democrat Sandy Pappas turned that trade-off around, warning Republicans.
Going to an all-cash bill will squeeze not only your number one priority, tax relief, and make that more difficult to do, but will make it more difficult for me to fund all of these projects that are in this great bill today.
And Pappas strongly hinted that Republicans' projects might be the casualties.
I mean, to do a balanced bill, I need to have a partner. I need to have a partner I can work with that agrees that we'll work together to pass a bonding bill. If it's just up to me, I don't know. I don't know if I can maintain a balance.
Isn't it extraordinary that we're getting threatened on the floor right now, that they're going to strip our projects out because we want tax relief for Minnesota?
Senate Republican Minority Leader Mark Johnson. Governor Tim Walz, at the end of the week, signed into law one of Democrats' top priorities for the 2003 legislative session, free school breakfast and lunch for all Minnesota students, regardless of family income. Republican Senator Jason Rarick from Pine City objected, pointing to statistics showing that 60% of Minnesota students need school meal assistance. However,
this bill is going far beyond in saying 100% of Minnesota students will get this assistance.
Rarick proposed an honor system. Families making over $500,000 could refuse free meals.
This allows for families that do not feel they need that assistance to basically opt out.
Rarick argued that money could then go towards school districts' other needs, including special education. But Minneapolis Democrat Scott Dibble responded, free meals must be universal, pointing to some school districts' regulations, despite a state law to avoid them.
Give children alternate meals of varying quality, issue verbal warnings, deny snack milks and juices to small children with delinquent lunch accounts.
But Mazeppa Republican Steve Draskowski said,
the people of Minnesota are paying in this bill over $400 million to pay for the lunches of kids, the majority of which are already having their lunches paid for by their families now.
But Eden Prairie Democrat Steve Swadzinski told colleagues he is voting yes for all the students who were not in the lunchroom and during his teaching career.
I'd see some kid outside their locker on the floor, and I'd give them a jab, and I'd say, hey, how come you're not in the lunchroom? And they'd say something witty and intelligent, but I knew why they weren't in the lunchroom.
But one comment during Senate floor debate this week triggered a firestorm in Minnesota and across the country when Mazeppa Republican Steve Draskowski said,
I have yet to meet a person in Minnesota that is hungry. Yet today, I have yet to meet a person in Minnesota that says they don't have access to enough food to eat. Now, I should say that hunger is a relative term. I had a cereal bar for breakfast. I guess I'm hungry now.
There are tens of thousands of kids in school right now in Minnesota with rumbling stomachs who are trying to learn while they are hungry.
Woodbury Democrat Nicole Mitchell. State Democratic Party spokesman Brian Evans said, quote, when Draskowski says he has never met a hungry Minnesotan, he is either lying or he is deliberately ignoring the families in his district and across the state that are struggling. Hunger Free America CEO Joel Berg said denying the obvious statewide problem of hunger is not a serious way to legislate.
I challenge the senator to go to a food pantry or soup kitchen in Minnesota. There are over 600 of them statewide. There's hunger and food charities, most run by churches, in every corner of the state.
And Tasha, MNN made requests for comment from Draskowski, but there was no response.
Thanks, Bill. Never a dull moment at the state capitol. More Minnesota Matters right after this.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that overall you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't sat in your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed, and they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs, and it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover keytar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff, create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Minnesota Matters. I'm Tasha Radel. March is NCAA tournament time, and it also happens to be Problem Gambling Awareness Month. MNN's Brent Palm talks with an official from the Minnesota Problem Gambling Alliance about their efforts, the push to legalize sports betting, plus brackets and office pools.
Susan Sheridan Tucker, Executive Director of the Minnesota Alliance on Problem Gambling. Hey, thanks for joining us today.
Happy to do so. It's Problem Gambling Awareness Month.
Tell us, what do we do during Problem Gambling Awareness Month? What kind of stuff do we do in March?
So for us, it's really not much different from the work that we do every other month of the year. We do spend a little bit more money on advertising, getting things out on social media. We see an increase in public presentations, so it's a busy month with that. But we continue to do our advocacy work, you know, throughout the year. It's nice to have a month set aside to call attention to it, but this work is done every single day.
I have to ask, is it a coincidence that Problem Gambling Awareness Month falls during the NCAA men's basketball tournament and the Final Four?
It is absolutely no coincidence. It was very deliberate. Knowing that so many Americans participate and have a lot of fun with the brackets and betting on those, which our organization is not opposed to gambling, but we really want people to be safe and do healthy play, which means never spending more money than you can afford to lose. We suggest to people, we advocate that you set time and money limits whenever you're gambling. And particularly now with sports betting, though not legal yet in Minnesota, we know people are betting on sports on their phones. And anyone in Minnesota who is betting on their phone currently is being directed to an offshore site, which is totally unregulated and very predatory. But the style in which sports betting has kind of morphed into, it's not just about betting the outcome of the game anymore. It's about in-prop bets, microtransactions, as we like to call them. So people have opportunities to bet on almost anything happening in the game, whether it's actually related to the game or not. And that's a cause for alarm for people who may have a predilection for addiction. Because when you're betting on your phone particularly, there's literally no friction, meaning there's no opportunity to kind of stop and take a breath. You can just continue to, you know, push those buttons and place those bets. So we want people to be more aware of their activities. And we're also wanting the gaming industry to also take responsibility by providing already existing tools that they can embed in their applications for players to know how much they've spent, how much time they've played, how much money they've lost.
Hey, let me ask you this. If people in Minnesota are already doing this, we know there's a bill at the legislature that would, if passed, allow betting on mobile apps and at the tribal casinos. What would change if folks are already betting on a mobile app?
So the concept between legalizing it is that the players who are currently betting on offshore sites would move into the regulatory sites, the regulated sites, as well as new customers. I mean, there will be lots of new customers who are not interested in betting on offshore sites, but with a regulated market will want to participate. So, you know, that's the attraction, is to frankly make it safer for players by regulating it.
Interesting. And you mentioned earlier that you guys don't take a position on gambling, but you're concerned about when it becomes a problem and addiction.
Exactly. We do not take a position on the legalization of it. It's happening. It's the genie is out of the bottle, so to speak. It's been with us forever and ever. We just want to make sure that every player knows the risks that are involved in playing, and that they play knowing those risks and can continue to have fun. And when the fun stops, then the gambling should stop as well.
And so would any of that be different if you physically placed sport wagers at the casinos?
Well, there'd be a little bit more friction because you're physically in the space. You know, I would expect that there'd be some time delays in placing bets rather than on your phone. And, you know, there's opportunity, I think, when you're in a casino space, that if you're with your buds, you know, and you're having a good time, you may not lose sense of how many bets that you're putting in. So I think, you know, gambling is often a social activity, which makes it fun. But when somebody is in a deep addiction, they tend to isolate themselves because they don't want to be, they don't want their gambling to be interfered with. So that's why the phone is something that we're really concerned about.
Thanks for the insight, Susan. Hey, if somebody has a problem and or they want some help, or they just want to talk to somebody, how can they get a hold of you folks?
So we are not counselors, we are advocates, but the 800, the helpline number, which is 1-800-333-4673, will connect you to a call center that can, if you're really in a point of crisis, they will talk you through that. If you're looking for a referral to a problem counselor, they can provide the provide that referral as well.
Thanks, Brent. Stay tuned. More Minnesota Matters after this. Welcome back to Minnesota Matters. I'm Tasha Radel. This week, MNN contributor Blois Olson continues his series on the continued workforce shortage long-term care centers around the state are facing.
This is Blois Olson for Minnesota Matters. During our recent conversation and roundtable in Rochester, we spoke with Representative Kim Hicks about what the legislature is doing to address the long-term care staffing crisis and what we need to do for funding this session. Sure. Representative Hicks, from the House perspective, where does long-term care funding fit in the dialogue, discussion amongst your members and colleagues?
Yeah. So we are really, really focused on making sure people get the care they need, and that includes long-term care funding. This is an area that I'm very, very passionate about. I was a direct support professional for 19 years. All I've ever done is care for people with disabilities, many of which in the community-based long-term care system. And so I understand intimately and personally that where the holes are in the system, what's not working. And I also remember, you know, 2008, right? When we really uninvested in a lot of those things. And we've worked really hard to make investments, you know, over the years, and the legislature has worked really hard to increase investment. But frankly, the workforce shortage, which we all knew was coming, I joke all the time that I sat in a conference when I was like in my 20s, right? About the silver tsunami and what that was going to do in a workforce shortage and a care shortage, and that we needed to make bold, I still remember the speaker, I don't even remember, we need to make bold investments now so we have caregivers then, was sort of, you know, I mean, they said that over and over again. And, you know, I think we made investments, but they maybe weren't bold enough. And I don't know that we were prepared for kind of the wave as it rolled in, and then coupled with inflation, right? So those two things together just didn't really have us set up to help ensure we were successful in this space. And so I think we understand that has happened. I think we recognize where we are at with those barriers. And I think we are actively working and have lots of bills to kind of put the different puzzle pieces together. I wish there was like a do this thing and that will solve it. But frankly, people live in different places in the community. People have different needs. And so the solutions are just as complex as the people that we are supporting.
But recognizing that you have to deal with other topics, how does this issue get prioritized amongst your colleagues in the House to make sure that there is clear communication and an understanding?
Yeah. So I think I'm a unique first termer because I came up in this world. I mean, the reason Jessica quoted me is because we had this conversation, because we've worked together for a long time, right? Like I came up in this world. This isn't new for me. I understand this issue very, very well. And so it has been disability services, long-term care, humans have been my focus. And so I came in with kind of a slightly different grounding. But then I don't have grounding in a lot of other spaces. And so I think for our caucus and for first years, I think we are really committed. We're a passionate, passionate group, and we're really committed to making sure that we're caring for our neighbors, all of our neighbors, including our seniors and our folks in long-term care, or who are receiving long-term care in the community, so they can stay and live in the communities that they want to be in for as long as they can. And so there's a lot to learn, and it's a quick pace, but I think our entire caucus, and I know my freshman class, first year class specifically, are really committed to the care structures. And so I am optimistic that we're going to be able to make a bold investment.
Can you talk about what you hear, what you sense about what we have to offer the next generation of caregiver to make sure that we're creating a pipeline to not just fill now, but be ready for the future?
Yeah. So we also have some bills for that are working their way through the legislature. And I think, you know, when I started in as a direct care professional, it was a career, right? You could support a family on it. You could move your way up, right, into different roles. Maybe go back to school, maybe not. But it was a valued career choice. People talked about it as a career choice, and that has changed. And now it's not seen as a valued career. And I think that's part of the struggle, and that's part of what we need to do is not only invest in it financially so that people can afford to do this work for a living, but also to invest in it as a community and culturally to make it a real valuable career that people talk about with their high school guidance counselor in the same way they talk about being an engineer. This is a career, and it is a valued career, and we need to as a society bring it up to that standard as well through wages and pay, but also through the way we talk about it. So we don't see it as the thing that people do until they do something else, but that we see it as the thing that people do as their career.
Thanks, Blois. Such an important topic. More Minnesota Matters in 60 seconds.
Quitting smoking or vaping can be difficult, and it can be even harder during times like these when stress is often higher. Finding healthy ways to manage that stress without nicotine is important. For Minnesota residents who are ready to quit smoking, vaping, or using smokeless tobacco, Quit Partner is ready to help. Through a family of free programs, Quit Partner offers free support like one-on-one coaching, emails and texts, educational materials, and quit medications like patches, gum, and lozenges delivered by mail. In fact, a mix of quit coaching and quit medications can help double a person's chances of quitting. No matter what support a person would like to try through Quit Partner, it's always judgment-free. And now that Minnesota has raised the legal sales age for tobacco to 21, residents may be looking for quitting resources now more than ever. To learn more, visit quitpartnermn.com or call 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
Welcome back to Minnesota Matters. I'm Tasha Radel. This week, I visited with Cree Larson, Executive Director of First Call for Help of Itasca County, about the services they provide for someone in a mental health crisis. Cree, can you tell us a little bit about your team and First Call for Help?
So First Call for Help was created in Itasca County in 1974. We are a crisis line and a resource line for 47 counties out of the state of Minnesota. So we are 211 for 7 counties and also do the triaging, crisis intervention, dispatching a mobile crisis, linking to resources, all of that out of our office. So I have a staff of 56 and 32 contractors working here at this agency. We operate 24 hours a day, and we are all in-house, so we don't port phones out of our building. We are all in office, sitting in a crisis intervention center, ready to answer those lines.
And I know you've been involved and are taking part with the 988 Suicide Lifeline campaign for Minnesota. Is that correct?
That's correct. So we answer primary 47 counties for 988, and then we back up the entire state, 87 counties. So we back up the other three call centers, and we are right now the only 988 text and chat center. We do that out of our building as well, 24 hours a day.
And, you know, the 988 suicide lifeline number, you know, was just launched. I believe it was last summer. And how has that been going? Have people been utilizing 988?
They have been utilizing it, and I'm thrilled about that because 988 is meant to be a new access door that nationwide people understand if you're in mental health emergency, you dial 988. Much like in the 70s, 911 was created for the same reason. Rather than having to know your local police department number, you could dial 911. So 988 was launched on July 15th of last year, and it has steadily been growing in the number of people using it as an access point for mental health support. And a vast majority of those people are new. They haven't used local crisis lines in the past. They've heard about 988, needed it, remembered the three-digit number, and they called. And that is the mission behind 988, is to make sure everybody knows where to call when you're in a mental health crisis to get support, assessment, and intervention.
Obviously, we can't go into specifics, but are you seeing folks that are utilizing 988, I guess, across all different age groups?
Yes, we are. And so the younger youth, parents will use the line for them. As we get into the teenage years, kids with phones, they're using the line. High school students, new kids into college, adults, parents, all the way up to geriatrics.
I know that there's the texting option too. Has that right. been more popular with the younger folks?
It is. So we run the text and chat for Minnesota out of our office. And I will say the majority of individuals texting and chatting are youth or a younger adult.
Was there anything else you wanted to hit on or add today that I didn't bring up?
The only thing I can think of is hoping that 980 really becomes a number that people hear, remember, and when they're in crisis, not hesitate to call, knowing there's going to be a live person on the line there for them to support them in their need.
Thanks again to my guest, Cree Larson, Executive Director of First Call for Help of Itasca County. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Minnesota Matters. Be sure to join us again next week on this MNN affiliate station, same time, same place. Until next time, I'm Tasha Radel. Have a great week.